Our next guest is an Emmy Award-winning actress, an author, and a podcast host. You've seen her in television shows like True Blood, Cougar Town, movies like Click and Terminator 3. We are thrilled to be joined this afternoon by the multi-talented Carolyn Hennessy. Carolyn, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me. How are you doing all there in Maine?
Well, we're doing pretty well. How are things for you in these interesting times?
Very interesting times, aren't they? Yeah, things are quiet here at the homestead. There's no traffic. Oh, there are lines, yes, outside the Targets and the and the Ralphs, but things are quiet here. So I'm taking the time to sort of hunker down and get all the projects done.
Well, yeah, and you've got a lot of projects going, but it's good to know in life what you want to do, and you have known this is what you wanted to do with your life since an incredibly young age.
Very young, very young. Yeah, when I first walked onto my first soundstage, and that was for a film that my father was the production designer on called Fantastic Voyage, and so I was over at 20th Century Fox with my mom and my little brother, and we were going to visit Dad, and I walked onto the soundstage, and I said, "That's it. I'm done. Stick a fork in me. That's it." So I knew when I was very young.
Well, and you've had so many wonderful roles, but you're getting such a great response and terrific reviews for your work in Studio City and the character of Gloria. Can you talk a little bit about her?
Well, first of all, you have to understand that Studio City was the brainchild of Sean Kanan, who starred in Studio City, and he calls it his love letter to soap. And people might hear that and think, "Oh, well, this is just a soap opera." It's not. It happens to star some wonderful actors who just happen to be on soap: Kristen Rogers and Sarah Joy Brown, Sean Kanan, myself, and it is also about a soap opera actor, but he's facing these life crises and career crises. He's aging out of being a leading soap opera actor, and you know all the sort of the psychological turmoil that entails. And I play the executive producer of this soap that he's on called Hearts on Fire. And Gloria's fascinating. She's sort of in the vein of a Jill Farren Phelps, who was the executive producer of General Hospital for so many years, or a Gloria Monty, or a Frank Valentini, except for the fact that Gloria can be deliberately cruel when she needs to be, and brutal. And then we see her, you know, sobbing, and we're not quite sure why. So she's really multifaceted, but she's got a show to run, and she's got to bring it in, you know, under budget. So it's wonderful kind of to see the twists and turns of her character, and hopefully in season two, we will discover why she's crying. So,
well, that's what's...
That. But, it's a lot of fun.
But that's what's going to make it so interesting as an actor, too, that could have been a very black-and-white, one-dimensional role, but you and the writers have worked to make Gloria so complex and to give that level of compassion that maybe people didn't see coming.
Well, you never want to just play harsh and brutal and cruel, because that's one note in people... First of all, people will get tired of it very quickly, and you end up really not caring about the characters. If they're not even characters that you love to hate, you just hate them. So there's always something going on under the surface. We are not one-dimensional creatures as human beings. We're multifaceted, and it's the actor's job to sort of dig a little deeper and figure out what makes certain characters tick so that they are, if not relatable to the audience, at least they are cautionary tales, if that makes any sense.
You've also done a lot of work on General Hospital, and we've talked with so many actors who have done other things, and you've done film and stage work as well, but there's something about the daytime drama that really puts you on your mettle as an actor. What are the biggest challenges in doing that?
Well, you get one take. you get one take. Sometimes you get two if there's a technical problem or if you really mess up. But you get one take to bring your A game, and there's no going back. And so you have to be spot on, or at least you have to convince everyone that you're spot on, and that's it. And we do sometimes 80 pages a day, and on a on a procedural or a film or a single-cam television show, you do maybe like between 6 and 10 pages a day. You know, and so we crank it out, and it's a wonderful training ground for young actors, and it keeps the rest of us, you know, it keeps our minds sharp.
We're talking with Carolyn Hennessy here on Downtown. Excited for this new film. What can you tell us about The Swing of Things with Owen Wilson and John Lovitz? Yeah.
Right. It's very interesting. We shot that in Jamaica, and Swing of Things is an apt title because we were housed at and we filmed at a swinger resort in Jamaica. So it's kind of that was really interesting. If your audience can just imagine it, I probably saw it. I saw it and came back slightly scarred, but I'm working through it. So it's about this beautiful couple that find each other and find love, and they are heading off to this destination wedding on the Cayman Islands, but are blown off course with the entire wedding party aboard this plane, and they have to land in Jamaica. And the only resort that will take them in on such short notice is called Hedonism 2. And that's where we end up. And the wacky hijinks ensue. So, but love conquers all. And then there are some... And let's just put it this way. The prepubescent boys will enjoy it.
Well, the complete opposite side of the coin here, and showing your range as well. You were honored for your work in Terrence McNally's Masterclass when you did it at the Gary Marshall Theater. We lost Terrence McNally recently. What was it like to be able to say those beautiful words that he wrote?
It was life-changing, to be honest with you, as an actor, as a human, but specifically as an artist, to be able to say those words with him actually still alive. He wanted to be able to come see this production. Gary Marshall was Terrence McNally's best friend, and that's why we were able to get the rights to do it in Los Angeles. To say them, because every word that he wrote for Maria Callas to say while teaching this masterclass, this fictional masterclass, he based it on her series of masterclasses that she taught at Juilliard while she was still alive. But every word that she says is true about art. It is true about, you know, what you have to do to convince an audience that for that precise moment in time, your voice is the only one that matters. And what you are saying is the truth. And art is truth. And you are just the vessel that's kind of conveying it. It was lovely. It was lovely. I felt like I ran a marathon every night, and I came in the winner.
Advocating for animals has been a passion of yours for a long, long time, and you've turned that into a podcast. Can you tell us a little bit about Animal Magnetism?
Sure. I unfortunately had to sort of shut it down within the last couple of months because where it was being hosted, there were some issues with where it was being hosted, so I had to sort of gently remove it from the company that was hosting it. And I'm going to put them all up on YouTube and then look for another hosting site. But as soon as they're up on YouTube, the world will know it. And you can go back and see, you go into the archive. And it's a program that deals with, it deals with real world problems and real world solutions to those problems. So it's the antithesis of an animal activist show. It's an advocacy show, understanding the necessity and the wonderful work that modern zoos and aquariums do, unlike the activists who want to sort of, you know, burn down the zoos and walk hand in hand with all the animals down Main Street. That's illogical and naive thinking, as far as I'm concerned. So I talk with the experts in the field. I've had Jack Hanna on and people from the Georgia Aquarium, and my dear friend Gray Stafford, who was a trainer and an advocate for SeaWorld. And it's really getting the public who might think that listening to the activists is really the way to go when it feels good in the moment, but it's the worst possible thing for the actual animals themselves. And so it's really getting people to understand that we do not care about what we don't know about. And if and modern zoos, aquariums, and zoological institutions are doing their best to preserve and conserve species for the next generation and for the next generation of the species themselves. So that's really what it's all about. But it's a lot of fun. I'm terribly irreverent, and I pull no punches.
And as if all that's not enough, you found the time to also become a New York Times best-selling author. How did you get started on the Pandora series of books?
Very briefly, I was in a writing workshop, and I was I just read Wicked by Gregory Maguire before it was turned into a musical, and I was interested in misunderstood women in fiction. As Gregory Maguire points out that, you know, the Wicked Witch of the West wasn't evil, and she was just misunderstood. She was trying to do a good thing. And I started thinking about other women in fiction that had blame heaped on them when they were simply trying to do their best. And one of these short stories that I wrote along those lines was Pandora. And from there, it turned into a novel, which turned into seven novels. And so it's a retelling of the classical Greek myth, only my Pandora is not a full-grown woman with a box of evil and a boatload of curiosity. Mine is a 13-year-old girl with all the, you know, the glory and the angst that being 13 entails. She doesn't know how fabulous she is. Life is just one big, you know, misery. And she finds the box and she takes it to school and all hell breaks loose. And she's given a choice by the king of the gods, Zeus, that she and her family either suffers for what she does, for what she did, or she's got to go and get everything that got out of the box back in the box. And seven books later, she and her two best friends have explored the world, and they've bonded, and they have lived by their wits, and they've succeeded. And I won't give any spoilers out, but there were seven big evils in the box, and there are seven books. So there you go. But it's written with a tremendous amount of humor and wit, and it's for kids and adults.
Check out Studio City, available on Amazon Prime, Carolyn's books, and everything she does. Carolyn, you're a delight to talk with. Thanks so much for being with us today. We wish you continued success and stay safe.
My pleasure, and lots of good health, lots of good health in Maine.